Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast12. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast12. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
Some hauntings begin suddenly. A crash in the night, a whisper in your ear. Others unfold over years, a pattern of shadows and whispers that follow you from place to place until you start to wonder if the ghost isn't tied to the house at all, but to you. For one woman, now 33, the story began in her teenage years. She was 15, lying in her room on an ordinary school night when it happened. The posters on her wall, still flat paper tacked to plaster, began to stir. A faint flutter as if a hidden wind were pushing behind them, not a storm, not a draft, something subtler, stranger. The sound filled the room, soft but insistent, and dread sank into her stomach. She lay frozen, staring at the walls. Then finally, panic took over. "I'm not staying in here," she thought, and fled down the hall to the family room. That night, her brothers happened to be staying over. They were pranksters, sure, but not this time. They were already in bed, lights out. She told them what had happened, her voice tight with fear. They stayed up with her, trying to keep her calm, and then one of her brothers went still, eyes locked on the hallway. There in the shadows stood a figure, a dark outline at the threshold of her bedroom door. She saw it too, tall, silent, watching, her chest locked tight. Sleep was impossible. She drifted through the hours until morning, heavy-eyed and terrified, forcing herself through the motions of getting ready for school. That's when she found the hamsters, two of them kept in a cage, divided by wire. The smaller one lived above, the larger one below. That morning, when she went to feed them, the little one's head was gone. Not just chewed, not mangled, gone. No skull, no blood, no trace, simply gone. She searched every inch of the cage, convinced the larger hamster must have done it, but the wires were tight, no more than a quarter of an inch apart. It would have been impossible to pull the head through, and yet there was nothing left to find. No remains. Just a headless body in the straw. Whatever had entered her room that night hadn't left empty-handed. Years passed, but the shadows did not. At 19, in a different house, she began waking at the same hour, between 2:30 and 3 a.m., the hour folklore calls the witching hour. Something stirred her awake, whispering in her nerves, and always. Her eyes were pulled to the same place, the corner of her room. A shadow stood there, tall, still, watching. At first, it lingered in the farthest edges of the room, but with each visit, it crept closer. By 21, she had moved again, into an apartment. And still, the pattern followed. One night at the familiar hour, she woke to find the shadow not in the corner, not across the room, but at the foot of her bed. Moonlight striped the sheets through the blinds. Half awake, she thought it was her husband, standing there. "What are you doing?" she asked, her voice groggy. But when she reached out, she felt him beside her, asleep. Her heart dropped. She turned back, and the shadow darted. Quick, impossible, vanishing halfway to the bedroom door as if it had been swallowed by the air itself. She leapt from bed, searched the house, convinced someone had broken in. But the house was empty, and the shadows weren't finished. A couple of nights later, around that same hour, the shadows returned, but this time they brought sound. She'd fallen asleep with the television on, heat prickling her skin. She got up to turn the AC down, opened her bedroom door, and flicked on the hallway light. And then from the darkness, it came. Music, not just any song. It's a small world. The tinny, looping melody echoed faintly down the hall, eerie and out of place, in a silent home. She froze, baffled. They didn't own any toy that played that tune, and yet it grew louder as she moved toward the sound, and her stomach dropped when she found the source. A ceramic clown, she had bought it a year earlier, broken, its music box mechanism ruined. The clown's head rocked back and forth on a ceramic pin with a magnet at the end, designed to trigger the song. But it had no batteries. She never even heard what tune it was supposed to play. And now, in the dead of night, it played perfectly. She tried everything. Pulled the head off, shook the hollow shell, demanded it stop. The music only wound tighter, louder, as if mocking her. Finally, minutes later, the tune sputtered out, leaving only silence and a deep dread that the house itself was alive. But the shadows weren't content with toys. They wanted flesh. At 26, she was staying over at her boyfriend's. They slept side by side, her body curled face down when hands slid beneath her arms, fingers gripped tight, pulling her up, lifting her slowly off the bed. She snapped awake, heart pounding, and saw it. A massive, black, sheet-like form hovering above the bed. It hung over her boyfriend, its edges shifting like smoke, its bulk blotting out the ceiling. She shook her boyfriend awake, and as she did, the thing dissolved into the air. The next morning, she said nothing. She wanted desperately to believe it had been a dream, the mind's trick in the fog between sleep and waking. But later that day, outside, cigarette smoke curling between them, her boyfriend spoke first. He described what he had seen in the night, the same thing she had seen, a black mass hovering over them both. Her heart sank. The denial was gone. Whatever it was, it had been real, and it had touched her. From then on, she never wanted to fall asleep in the dark again. She left the TV on. She avoided being the last one awake in bed, because once a shadow lays its hands on you, there's no pretending it isn't real. The visits became more frequent. One morning, alone in bed, she stirred to the sound of movement, knees pressing into the mattress at the far end. The weight crawled up the bed closer, closer, until it spooned against her back. At first, she thought it was her boyfriend returning from work. The body pressed warm against hers, but it wasn't solid. Not like flesh. She rolled over and collided with something that wasn't fully there. A half-formed presence, cold and consuming. Suddenly, the air around her thinned. Consciousness slipped. She felt herself drowning, not in water, but in death itself. As if she were being shown the last moments of whatever this thing had once been. Its death bleeding into hers. She fought, clawed her way back to waking. Breath came ragged, the air sharp in her lungs, but the imprint remained. The memory of a death that wasn't hers pressed into her like a scar. And it wasn't confined to one house. At a friend's place, an old frame house raised on blocks, she felt it again. 2 in the morning, the kitchen dim, she cracked a tray of ice, and breath brushed the back of her neck. A voice whispered, "Shh," right against her ear. She felt the air move. Other nights in that house, she heard voices in the back rooms. A woman's voice, carrying conversation with no one. Each time she stepped closer, silence fell. The dog barked at the walls, growling at nothing visible. The atmosphere pressed in heavy, dangerous, as if the house itself resented her presence. Threat. That's what she felt there. Not curiosity, not sadness, malice. The shadows were learning how to speak. In hauntings like these, the rules never stay still. Just when you think you've mapped the pattern, shadow in the corner, music in the hall, the story shifts, turns the mundane into an opening, a backyard, a TV show. A morning diaper change. You learn that anything can be a doorway if something wants in badly enough. For a long while, nothing happened, or at least nothing worth writing down. Life filled itself with ordinary noise, work, errands, naps taken in stolen daylight. She remarried. There was a baby, a toddler, the hectic tide of sippy cups and laundry, a home that felt blessedly unremarkable. Then one morning, feeding the infant on the couch, she saw movement through the sliding glass door, a streak of familiar color crossing the yard, her older daughter's cat, the one that had been missing a year. She stood so fast the bottle almost slipped from her hand, slid the patio door open, and stepped into the heat. The yard was empty. No cat, no sound, just the hum of the fence line and the quiet breathing of the morning. Distance alone made the sight impossible. Even if it were alive, it couldn't have cleared the fence that quickly. But denial is a sturdy habit. She told herself a story about angles and sight lines. She told herself what she needed to function. She went back inside. Later that morning, her daughter sprawled in the living room, and the TV murmured an old episode of Angel while she took the toddler to his room to change him. He lay there giggling, then went suddenly quiet, eyes tracking past her shoulder toward the hallway. She turned and saw nothing, just the open door, the bright strip of light across the carpet. She looked back to the child and then heard the change. Not a voice, not a footstep. The television in her older daughter's room grew louder, like a door opening into sound. She pivoted again and saw it, a silhouette framed inside the doorway of the girl's room. Female, human shape, the slight cant of a head, the implied fall of hair. It wasn't a shadow cast by anything she recognized. It stood just past the threshold, as if deciding whether to step fully into the room. A few seconds, no more than that, and then the figure moved inward, vanishing into the space. She scooped the toddler up and hurried after, ready to scold about changing the volume before school, ready to say, "You scared me." But the room was empty. The bed still unmade, the TV flickering at its new volume, the air still carrying the ghost of someone who wasn't there. She went back to the living room, expecting to find her daughter coming out of the kitchen, a glass in her hand. Instead, the girl hadn't moved at all. Same spot, same posture, same slack concentration on the screen. When asked, she shook her head. No, she hadn't gone to her room. She hadn't touched the TV. "What did you see?" the girl asked finally. And that's when the morning opened like an old wound. Because at 6 o'clock, on her way to the bathroom, the daughter had seen something too. A figure near the foyer that looked like her mother. Not similar, her. The same height, the same movement, the same posture in the half light. She'd glanced down, reached for the bathroom light, looked back, and the figure was gone. A doppelganger, a copy. It's the kind of detail you hope never to add to your inventory, because a spirit that can mimic the living doesn't just walk your halls, it learns them. It learns you. They tried to laugh it off. They failed. The morning carried on. After the school run, the house settled into a narrow band of quiet. Infant drowsy in the swing, toddler rolling a truck along the couch, dog sprawled like warm punctuation marks on the rug. Her husband, working nights, slept behind the closed bedroom door. She had nearly convinced herself that stress had stretched her senses too thin, and that the worst had been a trick of overlapping mornings when the sound came, a door closing. Not the murmur of the AC shifting a loose latch, not the pop of settling wood, a real close, familiar, specific, the unique clap every door makes when you've lived with it long enough to know its voice. She and the boy and the dogs all turned their heads at once as if choreographed. They waited for him to appear at the end of the hall, rubbing sleep from his eyes, complaining about the TV. Nothing. She opened the bedroom door to find him still snoring, patterned and oblivious, the room cool and dark. So what door had closed? Who had closed it? Here's the difference between then and now. She didn't panic. The fear that once chased her into corners had thinned into something else, something almost domestic. She didn't feel threatened in this house. The shadows might pass through, the hinges might remember other hands, but the malice was gone. It felt less like an invasion and more like a draft running through a very old house. Annoying, uncanny, but not an intent to harm. Maybe it was the pace of life, maybe the exhaustion of motherhood, maybe the simple fact that vigilance burns out over time. Whatever the reason, the noise in her head quieted. The nights grew, if not restful, at least survivable. It didn't mean the past vanished. Memory is a place, and hers was crowded. A catalog of moments no one could explain, posters fluttering without wind, a headless hamster with no blood, the witching hour awakenings that pulled her gaze to the same corner over and over until the corner learned her name, the shadow at the foot of the bed mistaken for her husband, the music no batteries should play, a clown grinning while a children's song looped through the dark, the black mass that hovered and lifted, witnessed by two sets of eyes, the whisper at her neck, shh, and the dog barking at the walls, the weight crawling into bed with her like grief made animate, the cat in the yard a year too late, the silhouette in the bedroom doorway, the copy of herself by the foyer, the door that closed for no one. The story didn't form a neat arc. It braided instead a rope of nights. When people talk about shadow figures, they like to flatten the conversation into easy categories. Black equals bad. White equals guardian. Voices mean demons. Cold means the dead. She has read those opinions. She has lived something messier. Everything she ever saw was black. Yes, but black isn't immoral. It's a color in a dark room. Some of what came felt dangerous. Some felt only curious. Some felt like absence wearing a shape so it could be recognized at all. She doesn't rush to meaning anymore. Once she might have asked, are shadow people souls without enough energy to manifest? Echoes? Parasites? Once she might have tried to classify each encounter like a biologist pressing a new insect under glass. Now with two kids and a list of errands taped to the fridge, she's learned a more practical taxonomy. Did it want to hurt me? Did it try? Did it touch the children? The answers, no, not here, not now, are enough to make a life. There are habits she will never give up. She prefers the bed positioned so her back can find a wall. She sleeps better when the dogs are near. Their steady, suspicious hearts are early warning systems that never fail. She leaves a sliver of hallway light for the nights when a sound might need a name. She knows it's irrational. She also knows she's still here. Every so often, something small reminds her that the membrane between worlds hasn't thickened entirely. A toy will rattle in another room. A hallway will feel briefly occupied. Her son will pause in play and glance toward a corner, the way babies see what adults learn not to. Once in a long while, the missing cat will flicker at the edge of the yard like a loophole, a punctuation mark where the sentence should have ended. Those are the days she tightens the routines. She makes sure the doors are latched, the batteries fresh in the baby monitor, the dogs fed, the lights layered so night can't find a way to pretend it's thicker than it is. She doesn't evangelize. She doesn't try to convince anyone. When people ask, she offers the pieces that matter and keeps the rest for herself. Because stories like this are a kind of currency. Spend them too freely and you're left with only suspicion in return. Still, she told us, because telling is how you reclaim shape from the formless. Because saying this happened is a way to make it fit inside a single person's life. Sometimes she wonders about the first shadow, the one in the hallway when she was 15, the night the posters fluttered like birds trying to take flight. If she could trace a string from that moment to now, would it run straight? Did the thing that looked in on her then follow her through each address change, adapting its method like weather? Or were these separate storms attracted to the same low pressure in a person who learned too early to listen for them? There's no way to know, so she doesn't pretend she does. The not knowing is part of the shape. The last question people always want to ask her is the one she can't answer in a way that satisfies. Are shadow people bad? She shrugs. Everything she saw was black. Some of it was cruel. Some of it was warning. Some of it was simply there. Like a cold spot in a room with no vent. If there's a moral to any of it, it isn't black means bad. It's that the dark is complex, and so are the things that live in it. Tonight, if she hears a noise, she'll do what she's learned to do. She'll pause, listen, let her body decide whether this is a sound to fear or to file away. She'll check on the kids, adjust the blanket, whisper something plain and human like we're okay, because sometimes that's the only ritual that matters. She'll feel the dogs lift their heads and settle again. She'll lie down with her back against the wall, not because she expects hands to reach for her, but because the wall is honest, solid, present, here. And if, in the hour when clocks hesitate, she wakes for no reason at all and finds her eyes drawn to a familiar corner, she won't look away. She'll stare into the ordinary dark where extraordinary things once stood and remember that she survived them. She'll remember the music that played without batteries and the breath that whispered shh and the black shape that dissolved when called to witness. She'll remember how the worst moment, the weight climbing into bed, did not end her. She fought and she came back. She'll remember that sometimes the figure at the foot of the bed is only a figure at the foot of the bed, and sometimes it's the story your life chose to tell so you would learn to keep going anyway. She says she rarely sees or hears anything now. Maybe she's too busy to notice. Maybe whatever once needed her attention moved on. Maybe the house she lives in wants only to be a house. She doesn't complain. She doesn't miss the nights when the world tried to peel itself open around her. She knows peace when it comes, even if it arrives. With its shoes still dirty from crossing other fields. If you ask what she believes about ghosts, about shadows, about copies of ourselves that pass through the foyer at dawn, she smiles, because belief isn't the point. This is the point. She has lived through rooms where the air turned strange and the edges of things went soft. She has been lifted, pinned, whispered to. She has watched her child look into a doorway and widen his eyes at something she could not see. She has learned how to stand in a house that sometimes contains more than a house, and every so often, at the very edge of sleep, she'll feel the old prickle between her shoulder blades, the reflex that once sent her running. And she'll breathe through it. She'll let the moment pass like a cloud crossing the moon. Because the life she has now is louder than the life she had then. Because fear doesn't get to be the only narrator. Still, when the hallway goes very quiet, when the dogs go very still, when the AC pauses and the house listens to itself, she can't help it. She listens, too, for footsteps that aren't there, for a door that knows another hand, for a soft, almost playful melody winding up from a toy with no batteries, a song that should not play, a song that would tell her the boundary is thin again. And on those nights, she is 15 and 33 at once, watching the walls, waiting for the corner to answer, feeling the language of the dark gathering at her feet. Not afraid, not exactly. Just awake, just aware. Because if there's one lesson the shadow years have pressed into her, it's this. The things that visit us do not always want to be understood. Some only want to be noticed. Some want to be believed, and some, and these are the ones that haunt you longest, want to be remembered. She turns off the TV. She leaves the hall light on. She settles with her back to the wall and the dogs at her feet. The house breathes, the children dream. The night leans at the windows like a listener, and somewhere in the quiet beyond quiet, a corner of the dark smiles and waits.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day, only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.